Hey, yo. It's the Memo Show. It is a beautiful Saturday morning. The kids are running around. Football game is playing in the other room. Smell the breakfast cooking out in the kitchen. Drinking my coffee. Before we begin, I got some special stuff for you. Before we begin, I need you to go to Spotify or Apple Podcasts. I need you to subscribe to this podcast, and I need you to turn on automatic downloads. Also, leave a review if you like it. Leave a review if you don't. Spotify, I think, lets you do like 5 stars. Do 5 stars. That really helps. But today, I've got a guest. His name is Nate. He is a fashion designer and an artist. Probably on equal levels on both. He was also dodgeball champion. That's crazy. I found that so infatuating. So we'll get to hear his story. And I also have a voicemail from Pete. He's checking in. He was on episode 3, I believe. Yeah, Pete was on episode 3. He's checking in with a voicemail. You know how we all love Pete's voicemails. And also give me a follow on Instagram. At TheMemoShow. It's the only social media I use. People, please just go follow me on there. Share it. When I post, share it. I need growth in this thing, man. And you guys listen, but I guess this podcast thing, it goes by downloads. So thank you for listening. I appreciate it. I'm sorry I'm asking you to do all this shit. It's just part of the job, you know? So let's hear from Pete first. And then we'll get into the Nate interview. You can find him at shopnate.com. shopn8.com. Check out his stuff. It's really, 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 really cool. He'll be talking about his gallery exhibit that he's going to be doing pretty soon. I'm real excited for that. I'm going to definitely be there opening night. Yeah. So here's Pete. And then stick around for Nate. Thanks, y'all.
Hey, man. How's it going? I've been real busy, so I haven't been in touch, but I wanted to give you a call and just say I really like your podcast a lot. It's really cool. It's got a lot of diversity to it. I like generally like it. I'd listen to it even if I didn't know you. Like I'd find it super interesting. You know, I listen to it a lot because you're relatable, you know? So even if I didn't know you, I'd listen to it. And you're so relatable on the show that I'd listen to it even more, and then I'd start wondering, you know, what you're really like, and then you know I'd look you up a little bit maybe because just the podcast is so good, and I'd start wondering maybe what your hair smells like, you know, and then maybe I'd break in your house when you're asleep, and I'd just smell your hair a little bit, and then put my ear on your chest and listen to your heartbeat while you're sleeping. And I'd go through your sock drawer and I'd take one of your socks as like a souvenir. That's if I didn't know you. I mean, I know you. So I've done all these things already. Good podcast, though.
Out here in California, where we live out of doors so much of the time, our designers have developed new fashions for casual living. These fashions, styled in California, are gay and colorful, just right for summertime everywhere, and for you too. Welcome to our part of the country. This is a typical California day. At least it's the kind we like to think is typical. And we're noted for casual outdoor living. But did you know that California has become the fastest growing fashion and design center in the world? That's right. And why not? Look around you.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, man.
Thanks for having me to your studio.
Yeah, dude. Good to be here.
You're actually, just like Raul, you are on like the top of my list of people to interview when I was coming up with this podcast. So this is an achievement for me.
Well, thank you, man. That means a lot. I appreciate that. I'm flattered.
Yes. I always found you, number one, hilarious. And number two, very, very inspiring. And a lot of the stuff you do that you would wear to work, it was just so cool knowing that someone just like made that, you know?
Yeah.
I always found that so cool.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. Yeah.
All right. So I did do research.
Okay.
There's a few write-ups online that really wanted me to meet Nate, right?
Yeah. God.
Meet Nate.
I think that's the title of all of them.
Like, I was like, wait, am I on the same website?
How many times have you meet this guy?
So everyone knows you're a fashion designer. You moved to the City of Angels from Montana because there was nothing to offer there. You immediately got bamboozled out of $4,000 by some dude that goes by the Gentleman, who ironically wasn't gentlemanly at all. You learned your lesson to do it yourself, or it's not getting done right, or at all, blah, blah, blah. Who cares? Old news. Tell me about dodgeball.
That's funny.
There's literally no... There's like maybe one write-up on your dodgeball escapades.
That's funny.
And I didn't even know that was a thing. You got a gold medal.
I have a couple of them. Yeah.
A couple.
You got a couple of them, yeah.
And I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah. That's funny. I actually do dodgeball podcasts far more than I do fashion podcasts.
Wait, really?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
No way.
I get interviewed quite a bit for a dodgeball podcast, yeah.
I didn't see any of that.
Because I'm one of the guys, you know, so if people have like a dodgeball podcast, they'll ask me to be on it. I started playing, I don't know, 15 years ago, maybe a few years into LA, and I grew up playing baseball and, you know, competitive sports and whatnot. And so I was a competitive dude that was kind of lonely in LA. I didn't have like, you know, I had a decent group of friends, but we didn't have a whole lot in common. And it was one of those things where like, they were like work friends. So it was kind of like not forced, like they were great people, but like it was the only opportunity I had. Right. So it didn't feel as natural, I guess, because it was like, oh, they're work people. It's only people I know. Let's be friends. But then I met these like-minded, like kind of weirdos that were super competitive about this like game that at the time felt really silly, but fun, like silly and fun. And I fell in love with it. And got super competitive because I wasn't very good. And there's not a lot of things in my life like I was not good at right away, right? Like I catch on to things pretty quickly. Like that's always been one of my like kind of strengths is like I see something, I learn it. Like with all the stuff that I'm like building here, like I didn't know how to do it, but I was like, I bet I could learn. And I learned and I figured it out because that's just how my mind works. And again, like, you know, do it yourself and then it'll be done because no one will have as much care about something as you do, right? Like that's something that you're making. So with dodgeball, like I was fucking, can I cuss?
Yeah.
Shoot. Sorry. I was really bad at it. And it annoyed me so much because I was looking at these like nerds and these dorks that were like better than me. And I was like, what the hell? Like, this is not, you know, the hierarchy of what you're told life is. Like, if you're like an athletic dude, you should be like better at athletic things. And I was so bad. So the fire in me kind of lit and I was like, I'm not going to be bad at this for very long. And I got really good at it really quickly. And then there's like a really high level competitive thing that like, you know, you can get into if you're good. And I've made Team USA a bunch of times and I've been the captain a bunch of times. And I've traveled the world, like Hong Kong, Cambodia, Philippines, Amsterdam, Germany,
damn, bro.
Canada, obviously Mexico. And I'm going to Austria in August.
So you're still currently playing dodgeball?
Yeah, I retired. I retired after 2019 because I was like, okay, like I did my thing and I left on top. We had just won a gold medal for Team USA and I was good. I was happy. I was content with like my legacy and my place in the sport and whatever. But then they brought in a new style for Worlds, right? It was a new like ball type that Europe plays. Right. And it's like, and the reason they brought it in is because they wanted Europe to be a part of the organization. And Europe was like, well, unless we can play our style, you know, not everybody's going to want to play because you have people that have been playing the style for a decade. And they're like, well, why would I learn this style for a decade and then just come to Worlds, play a new style and get our asses kicked?
What's the major difference?
It's a different ball. So like, it's a totally different ball. So the ball that you picked up is the European ball.
Mm-hmm.
And the ball that we use is like foam. And theirs is like called cloth, but it's a different ball, different number of balls on the court and a different rule set. So because obviously we want to expand the sport and grow it, the logical move was to bring that style into Worlds and make that another division. And so what happened or what it was like, I watched it play out a couple years ago and I watched these teams win that I felt like if with some time and the right people, like we could beat them, you know? And so the competitiveness in me kind of turned back on and I was like, well, could I come out of retirement, put in some effort, learn this new style and this new ball, learn how to play with it because I've been playing the other ball for so long, and go try to win a gold medal in Austria? Well, sounds kind of awesome.
Yeah.
So that's what's happening right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Awesome. I didn't know you were still into it.
Yeah. I started back up maybe a year ago and I've been playing semi-regularly since, and then Team USA was just announced 2 weeks ago maybe, and so now it's like time to kind of get a little bit more into it. And it's not like, it's not crazy time consuming. Like, it's, you know, one or two nights a week for a couple hours you play, and then I always keep in shape anyway, so it's not like that. I'm running every morning anyways and working out, so it's not like that changed all that much for me. But, you know, it really, like, isn't that much of a routine change for me, because I'm a routine person. Like, that's just how my life works. So I just added, like, on Wednesday night I play for 2 hours, and on Sunday afternoon I play for 2 hours, and that's kind of it. So it's not really, like, as much time as it might sound, but yeah.
Have you always been athletic?
Yeah, I grew up playing baseball, basketball, and football, like the big three, you know, like you know, Montana, like you're growing up, if you're the son of a father that
played,
was athletic, like you're going to play sports, yeah. Right? And he was the coach for my baseball team for a while, and you know, that whole thing. But I was pretty good at baseball. I wasn't great. And pretty good in Montana means you're shit everywhere else.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, basically, because like there's so little competition up there because there's just not very many people. Like, someone that's really good in California compared to someone that's really good in Montana, it's not even close. Like, the California kid will just kill you, you know?
Is Montana more of like a football?
Montana's state? a nothing state. You know, and again, not no disrespect. I love Montana, but it's because there's so little population that there isn't like the grassroots competitive AAU stuff that makes all these players good, right? Like, yeah. You know, the California, the Texas, the Florida, those kids that like, it's because they're playing great competition and a ton of it,
yeah,
for years and years. And that's what builds their skill, right? Well, in Montana, it's like, you know, there's not even a million people in the state, or there probably is now. But like, you have to travel to even play. And will you even get enough kids to play? And you're always playing the same kids over and over again because that's where the population is. Yeah, there's no growth.
Competition.
So, and then because it's funny because we would travel out of state and just get killed. You know, because it's like, oh shit, this is like, now it's real. It's crazy.
This is how you play baseball.
Yeah. If you looked, I would imagine if you looked at like NFL draft, MLB draft, like the players drafted from Montana, I don't know if there's any. You know what I mean? Like, I know there's one NBA player that got drafted a few years back that was from like Great Falls or somewhere, but he got drafted and then was out of the league within a year. No disrespect, that's still incredible, but it's just, again, it's such a small population that it's hard to break through.
Dodgeball, they probably never even heard of dodgeball.
I would imagine we played it like, you know, recreationally.
Yeah, like at school.
Grade school,
that's
shit,
the only,
yeah.
That's the only time I've ever played dodgeball. And that fucking stupid movie.
Yeah.
The dodgeball movie, which everybody loved. But I really didn't think it was a real thing.
Yeah.
And someone, I think when I first started working with you, someone said to me, oh yeah, he's got like a gold medal in dodgeball. I was like, shut the fuck
up. Yeah, yeah.
There's no gold medals in dodgeball.
It's crazy.
And then they're like, no, for real, ask him about it.
Yeah.
And I was like, no way. And then I was reading about it and I was like, holy shit, this is crazy. I would never have thought like that's something really cool that I learned.
Yeah. We've been on ESPN a handful of times, and like ESPN like had a crew following us around for like a week, and we did like a Sports Center feature.
Huh.
Like, we were on SportsCenter playing dodgeball, which is kind of crazy.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's been an interesting ride. And it's funny because, like, for a while, you can be kind of embarrassed about it because, like, people have the reaction to you. They're like, dodgeball? It's not serious. But then I've been flown to Amsterdam for free and, like, been paid, or I've made, you know, I think on this one tournament, it was, like, 25 grand every year that you won it. And we won it, like, 5 years out of seven. So we won 125 grand, you know, which pays for the trips around the world. Like, it's pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's really cool. So there's more to Nate than the fashion designer aspect, or maybe the dodgeball Nate, there's more to him in the fashion world that we didn't know about. I don't know, like, what do you think is bigger, like, in your like legacy?
Ooh.
The dodgeball or the fashion? Maybe
I think fashion has a bigger reach. I think like the world accepts fashion and the world likes fashion and that kind of thing. So I think that will have a lasting legacy, or again, like, if things go well or whatever, the potential of that having a lasting legacy is more significant, especially if like the gallery show goes well and like the next steps in kind of what I'm trying to do go well, then that can last a long time. But in the dodgeball world, I'm definitely a way bigger deal than in the fashion world. Like, in the dodgeball world, like, I'm pretty close to the top of the mountain because I've just won more than anyone, and I've been the captain of those winning teams and been the guy like setting lineups and picking the teams and kind of doing these things that, you know, in that specific world, you know, my legacy is pretty huge, I think. But yeah.
So your goal is to match those two, or maybe exceed.
I would love that. Yes. I mean, if I match that, like, then everybody in the world would have heard of me, because again, in the dodgeball world, like, I would imagine most of the people have heard of me if they're in the competitive scene, of course. And if that's the case, then like everyone that has any sort of like idea what fashion is would know who I am. And that'd be incredible. Yeah. I don't want to be famous. Like, that's not like, I don't want to be famous for fashion. I want to be known in the fashion world, right? Like, I don't want like my life to change all that drastically. I really like my life. And I like just being able to create art by myself and not worry about anything else.
You just want to kind of make this feasible and have a space for it and be able to do it without worry.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I want like, and again, I do want people in the fashion world to see my stuff, love it or hate it. Like, I don't necessarily care if they're like, oh, this is the dopest shit ever. Like, but I do want to elicit like an emotional reaction. So whether that's positive or negative, doesn't really matter to me all that much, because I know it's dope.
But that's art that you're talking about.
Yeah,
basically. Yeah. So and I believe that's what you're trying to do with your fashion, is to make it be recognized more as an art form.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes, that's the goal. Every piece that I've made, you know, in the last 5 to 7 years, because the first handful of years were me just trying to learn it and trying to understand it. And I made some stuff that I look back and I'm like, well, it's not my favorite thing. I'm glad I made it. Would I wear it now? Probably not. But like, it's necessary steps in the evolution of an artist or whatever. But, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, I kind of realized, like, again, as you grow, and the pandemic kind of changed me, obviously. A pandemic kind of sped up that change, I guess, is a better way to put it. I realized, like, I didn't really care about sales. I didn't really care about doing what was cool or what was trendy. I wanted to do things that when people looked at them, they were intrigued by it or interested in it, right? Like art. Like, if you see something, like if you see a piece of art, right, whether it's good, bad, ugly, you love it, you don't love it, you look at it and you are intrigued by it, and you're like, why do I not like this? Why do I like this? Why does this give me an emotional reaction, or, you know, whatever? And I wanted that to be that people put something on and someone sees it and they're like, oh, that's really interesting. Now, maybe they don't know why they're interested in it. Maybe they know exactly why they're interested in it. But the idea of, like, you know, people seeing something and being like, oh, shit, that's really cool, is why I design the way that I do. Like, I want people to go, oh. And, like, everything that they notice, everything they see is just an extra, oh, okay. And I think with what I'm doing with my current project is, like, dumbing that down even further to a certain extent, right? Like, in a way that is, like, far more difficult than actually making fashion, right?
Yeah,
like,
from what I've seen, you're not really dumbing it down, you're dissecting it.
Okay, that's a better way to put it, yes, you're right. It's like, yeah, dissecting it actually is even, you know, looking at it, it looks like a dissection. But it's like, it's just kind of taking out any, like, uncertainty and guesswork from the person. And it's like, hey, like, this is exactly what this garment is, just expanded so you can kind of see. Dissection is a perfect word. You can see the innards of it. You can see it go together. You can see how it's constructed. And I think that, again, the goal is just to open people's minds and create a response, a reaction, and be like, oh God, that's a button-up shirt. It's 8 foot by 8 foot laid flat is a button-up shirt in a size medium. Like, it's not blown up. It's not, you know.
Yeah.
And the idea is to, like, just get that, oh, okay. You know, like, when I wear not my stuff and I'm out in the world, I don't really get approached or compliments or whatever, or, you know, it's just life as normal, right? But when I wear most of my pieces, people go out of their way to be like, oh, that's dope, that's super cool, because they're interesting. They just are. They're just like, something catches someone's eye and they're like, damn, that's really cool. And they don't know who I am. There's no reason for them to come up to me. There's no, like, incentive. It's not like friends. It's strangers that are like, damn, that's a cool shirt. And when's the last time you went up to a stranger and went, damn, that's a cool shirt? Probably not that often. And if you do, it's because it's something so significant that it makes you be uncomfortable for a second, because that's not a comfortable interaction necessarily.
Yeah.
You know? Because you never know what a stranger's going
to
say.
Yeah, I seen some dude on a motorcycle. He, like, pulled up next to me at a stoplight, and he had these really dope pants on. And I like rolled my window down. I went like this, like I have a, yeah, yeah. like I have a roller window. I was like
15 years ago. Yeah.
So I rolled my window down. I was like, yo, dope pants, bro. And he was like, he opened his helmet. He goes, what did you say? Like, he thought I was being confrontational. I was like, bro, dope pants. He was like, oh, thanks, man. Thanks. Cool. Cool. And then that was it, you know? But if I see something like really cool and striking like that, I'll tell people. And I think I've told you that more than once before I even knew that you made your own stuff. I'd be like, oh man, that's a dope jacket. And you're like, I made it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, no way.
Yeah. That's the,
yeah, yeah, I made it. And you know, a lot of people feel that art is fashion in and of itself, but I think people outside of the fashion world don't really see it as art. So with you kind of like blurring the line between these worlds, now that Instagram and TikTok have replaced word of mouth, what challenges do you face being a fashion designer / artist in this day and age of technology?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's changed my mindset in the fact that, like, I don't care about that sort of validation anymore, right? Because it's so shallow and so, like, not real. Like, none of that is real. Yeah. Like, the people reviewing things are reviewing things for likes and clicks, not for the actual reviewing of things. They say just absurd shit because the potential of it going viral is real, you know? And again, it's a lot of people's livings or whatever. So, like, the influencer culture, I think, in a lot of ways has helped brands and has done a lot of things, but it also has hurt. It has hurt, like, the genuineness of art. I don't know if genuineness is a word necessarily, but it felt good.
No, I know what you mean.
But it hurt that because nobody like actually takes the time to look at something because everything is so fast and everything is so like onto the next and onto the next that like, and fashion has always been a culprit of that. Like, it's like, oh, this is fall, winter 22. Like, we can't wear that anymore. It's like, why? It's fucking dope. Like, why can you not wear that? Or why is that not cool anymore? Because it was 6 months ago, right? Like, in the art world, the older the art, the better.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, you don't look at a piece of art. Like, it's almost the opposite in the art world where it's like, oh, that's a 2022. No thanks.
Yeah.
You know, but it's a 1922 and you're like, oh, sick. Right? Yeah. And I think that, like, and again, those both have their positives and negatives, of course, and I have feelings about that. But, like, I think what the internet culture has done, TikTok, Instagram, all that kind of shit, is, like, it has really helped me find clarity in why I'm doing it. Because for a while, I was, like, posting a lot, and I was, like, trying to figure out how to get people's likes or shoot interesting shit and make things that, like, you know, would get people's attention and whatever. And it wasn't genuine, and it didn't feel like art to me. It just felt like a business, right?
Yeah.
And again, to each their own, right? Like, if people are making clothes to make money and it's just a business, great. That's awesome. And I respect it and have no judgment toward it. That's not me, though. I don't see this as a business. I see this as an art form, and I don't make this art. And I did for a while. And fortunately I, like we talked about, right? Like, the growth that I had over the last few years is like, I'm not making this to sell a bunch of units. Like, if I did that, like, it wouldn't be made to order in Los Angeles. It would be made overseas at literally a 20th of the price. And I could do so many more units, and then I could pay marketing people or a PR firm to like actually like pitch it and shoot it. But instead, I'm just putting the money in the art because it makes me happier. Like, it's the joy is still there for me. And refining that joy is really difficult because it was like this, like beating my head against the wall. I was like, okay, I made this really dope thing. How do I sell it? Like, how do I get people to love it and repost it? And I was so worried about that external validation that I really stopped enjoying it at all. And I was like, oh, maybe I'll just close up the shop and then just make stuff on my own because I still enjoy it. But then there's that, like, if people don't see your art, what good is it almost, right? And again, not even just for like monetary purposes, just for the world to be a beautiful place, right? Like I would be really upset if there was no music in the world. Like, regardless if the artists are making money or not, like, obviously you want them to make money. It's hard stuff. But like, at a certain point, like, you just want your art to exist in the world, and you want people to enjoy it because it makes their life a little bit better. Or the world is a tough place to live. It really is. It's not easy to like find joy and find happiness in the world. But if I'm able to kind of like, even just if it's just a half second of someone going, damn, I like that. Or like, oh, that's really cool. Or, you know, job's done. Like, that's dope. That's all I really care about.
The real life likes.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
That's more important.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I don't post stuff on Instagram all that often at all. And I understand the importance of it. And I really like recognize that it does help a lot of people, but does it hurt more people than it helps? Like, I don't know. Like, Instagram makes me so anxious and so like Like, it makes me not happy, because if I fall into one of those holes, I'm like, oh, I need to get likes, or like, you know. And if I just avoid it completely, like, my life is just so much better, you know?
Yeah. I've been hearing that a lot from people, that just getting rid of it is, it just, it helps with your mental health.
Yeah.
So much. It's crazy. And it sucks, because we are on this edge where we need it, but do we really? And
yeah,
you know, what is another way that we can get our art out there for people to enjoy and for people to see? I know you're doing something different with yours. You're setting up a gallery, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And you previously had your stuff on in a gallery? Or is this your first time?
This is the first time doing like a gallery. Like, I've done pop-up shops and I've done runway shows and that kind of stuff. This is like, this, there will be nothing. Well, you know, the art theoretically will be for sale, I guess, but as pieces of art, not as clothing, right? So like, there won't be like a rack of button-ups for sale or whatever. It's not going to be a pop-up shop. It's a strictly like an art gallery show, like a, like with just exhibits that you walk in, you take in, you look at, and you go, you know. Hopefully you take it and look at it for a long period of time, because it's interesting to you and like, it's intriguing. But it's just to display works of art that I've created, and they are fashion based, and they are, you know, hopefully like enlightening and kind of, like you said, blurring the lines between the two, you know, forms of art, like the fine art world and the fashion world. And again, like, do I hope sales come from it? Probably, yeah. Like, I'd be lying to be like, you know, I hope nothing comes from this. Like, the whole point of it is to display art, and then hopefully like a different gallery reaches out and I can show it at a different gallery, or, you know, a museum reaches out, you know, which is, sounds crazy when I say it, but the ultimate goal, to have like a little wing at a museum. Yeah. That'd be like, you walk into the Broad and you see like the Nate Kreider exhibit, like, incredible.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's awesome.
And again, like, that's like high end dreaming stuff, which right now doesn't seem like a reality, but who knows, you know?
Doing research on your like fashion articles, I don't want to ask you questions that have already been answered, mm-hmm. like a million times.
Yeah.
You know, so,
but maybe your listeners haven't heard it, so don't, like, you know, don't let that stop you. If you think it's a compelling question, I don't mind answering it again if you think it is like something that you actually are curious about, and because maybe my answer will be different too. I don't know.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah, true. You've grown.
Yeah.
So.
And that those things happened years ago, and like, I mean, if you look at those articles, most of them are probably the same questions over and over.
They
you
are.
Know?
And that's why I was so, like, yeah, because I wrote the questions, yeah. I did the research, and I'm like, these are all my fucking questions. I was like, God damn it.
Yeah. But so. But again, like, those also don't have a ton of reach either. So like,
yeah.
So chances are it'll be the whoever's listening, it's probably their first time hearing it too.
All right, cool. What's some advice that you received that helped inspire you through all your hardships coming up in the art fashion world?
My dad is always the, you know, if you want something right, do it yourself, right, kind of thing. That's something that I've always tried to like live by a little bit, and it handcuffs you at certain times because you don't trust other people as much as you could, you know. Yeah. So there is definitely a downside to it, but no one's ever going to care about what you're doing more than you. I was having unrealistic expectations of partners and vendors and people that I hired to do certain parts of the job, right? And so I would innately be disappointed, and I would be bummed out because like the work wasn't as good, or they didn't seem to care as much. And then you have this realization of like, well, they're never going to care as much as you, right? So if you're able to do it yourself, do it. Learn it, figure it out, you know. Again, if you have the time, like not everybody has the time or the money or whatever. You know, everybody has their obstacles, but if you're able to take the time. And with me, for me, it was just like reevaluating how I spent a day. And it was like, okay, like I spent this much time doing this and this much time doing this. And at the end of the day, like, it's like, okay, so you got 2 hours of like Netflix or movies because you need to wind down. Okay, well, if you traded that for like, and again, I'm not trying to be one of those like Insta bro, like, oh, redo your day kind of thing. But like, but for me, it was like, I felt shittier after watching more than an hour of TV or whatever. So I was like, I can read, or I can start drawing, or learning Adobe Photoshop, or learning the Adobe suite or whatever, where I would have to pay someone to Photoshop things before, or pay someone to change my shitty drawings into like a nice illustration. And I was like, well, if I just learn how to do this, then I wouldn't have to do that. Yeah. You know, if I learn how to take photos, my own product shots, set up my own studio, I don't have to worry about like paying someone and then like asking them to edit these things that they're like, well, that's pretty good. And I'm like, well, it's not good enough, you know, because again, like they're an artist and I'm telling them how to do their art. Like it wasn't a good thing for me. I know I've strayed off the question, but yeah, if you want something,
okay.
If you want something right, do it yourself was a big thing from advice that I had. I think also like the follow your dreams advice is so cliche and it's so, it can be so silly, but it was one of the things that like, I always was like, I always had this weird, I don't think arrogance is the right word, but this like maybe delusion, this delusional like mindset where I was like, you know, everybody, you're told you're special when you're growing up, right? Is everybody special? No, not everybody can be special. Do you know what I mean? And that's not like an insult. Like if everybody was special, nobody's special, right?
Yeah.
You know, and I think like, and I think the truly like delusional people are the only ones that really think they're special and like put in the work to become special, because I always thought I was special. And now that I'm like grown, I wasn't special at all, but my mindset and my like work ethic is what made me special. Like I wasn't any different than the other millions of kids, but I like believed that I was. I had this like weird delusional thing where I was like, I definitely meant for something bigger and meant for something greater, and I'm meant to impact the world. And it's like, looking back, you're like, what a odd mindset to have. But what it did is it didn't, like that mindset didn't allow me to quit. So many times in the fashion stuff and teaching myself how to screen print and figuring out how to design, I didn't know how to do a t-shirt 10 years ago. And now I'm making like multi-layer coats that you can zip off that create different lengths of a coat. And like, and I'm creating these like 90 piece pattern things when I didn't even know what a pattern was, you know, 10 years ago. But it's because I like had this, again, this like thing in my head where I was like, you're meant to do something special, you know? And it wasn't special. It was just a bunch of hard work. Like it was just a ton of work that I put in, working a full-time job. And then the 2 days off, I would put in 12-hour days, you know, every day, every Saturday and Sunday I was up. Not Saturday, Sunday. Cause you know, when you work in retail, you don't really have Saturday, Sunday off, but like every like week off or day off that you had, I was up 5 a.m., you know, working, because that was the only time that I had to do something that I really love.
Yeah.
And so it was like this, like follow your dreams kind of thing, but it was the hard work as well. And then the last thing I'll say for like, and it wasn't really advice, but it was something that really changed my life, was my design partner. Her name is Lupita. She's like the technical genius behind my garments. I design them and I, you know, explain her, like I draw them and design them and do the write-ups on them and kind of do all that. But she does all the technical stuff, right? Like she turns my drawings into patterns and then turns them into samples that are wearable garments. And then we make adjustments. But so I met her 5 or 6 years ago now. And I had these like lofty ambitions and I was like, you know, I can make some cool stuff. And all these other, because I went to a bunch of factories in LA, bunch of pattern makers, bunch of sample makers, bunch of, you know, manufacturing places. And all of them were telling me no. Like telling me, they're like, oh, we can't make something like that. We can't make something like that. And this is early on, Nate, too. Like, and none of my stuff even then was like super complicated, right? Looking back, I'm like looking at the things that they told me no. I'm like, holy shit, I wonder what they'd say today. They'd be like, get the fuck out of here. Like, there's no way. And in our first meeting, she was like, she just kind of looked at me and I was like, is this too much, too complex? Like, whatever. And she goes, oh God, no. She goes, this is actually pretty easy. And she goes, and really, like, we can make anything that you can dream of. And I was like, oh, and this like switch click. Cause I was like,
you're like, founder.
Well, that was it. Yeah. And I legit wouldn't be anywhere close to where I'm at without her. And I, like the hanging garments that you see, that was a collaborative thing. I was like, how do you make a garment, but you're not sewing it together. You're sewing pockets in it so I can put wiring through it to display it. And she's like, I think we can do that. She's really amazing and just a genius. But the we can do anything you can dream of totally changed my perspective and perception, because like you have to follow certain rules of the universe, right? Like there's certain physical things, gravity, it always exists. And with fabric being like, you know, a physical thing that follows the rules of the universe, obviously like there's not, you can't do anything you want. But like within those things, she was like, we'll figure it out. And I was like, and again, it has to wrap on the human body. Like the human body also adds an interesting aspect. But that changed everything for me. And so I started drawing these like absurd things that I was like, well, this is kind of odd. Again, they still have to be like, I still wanted them to be wearable, right? So it wasn't like I was like Pablo Picasso-ing this shit. Like, yeah. So I'm not trying to like pretend that I can change the game or whatever. But it was like everything I wanted to wear, I wanted it to look like art. Like the symmetry, the asymmetry, the way that it falls on your body, the way it goes from arm to chest to arm, and it creates one shape, right? On your imperfect body, it creates a perfect shape. Which is always so intriguing to me, because the human body is this odd shaped pile of skin and muscle. But how do you like, you know, and like, but like fine art is like a canvas, right? And it's a flat, perfect surface that you paint on, and you can paint like perfect things because the medium in which you're painting in allows for that, right? But yeah. On the human body, it's super imperfect, and everybody shape is different and whatever. But it became this like interesting thing where I was like, how do I create this like perfectly symmetrical piece of art on this like wildly asymmetrical, imperfect body. And it, and that was kind of the goal of that. And yeah. And so that was,
yeah, but none of your pieces are symmetrical and your art isn't symmetrical either. I feel like you go out of your way to not be symmetrical.
Yeah. But if you look, there's symmetry in the asymmetry, right? Like where you're looking at it and it's like, oh, does that, but then every line matches perfectly in the asymmetry, right? And the way that it flows, like this, for example, like it looks pretty asymmetrical, but if you line up where your arms fall to your chest, like those lines hit perfectly where they need to be, right? And they flow. And like that right there, once that sits, all those lines go across arm, stomach, arm, back, and it's a perfect line.
Oh, I see it now.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Which is like super difficult because again, like how do you make something perfectly round on a weird shaped body?
Yeah, know? On a person.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And now again, that's just the goal. I'm not saying I achieved all of these things or whatever, but like that's the goal with all of it, you know?
It's the fire.
Yeah. Cause I want to do like, again, like the idea is just to elicit a reaction out of people. Like I want people to look at it and go, oh shit, that's interesting. And oh, that's pretty cool. One of the cooler moments I ever had was like, I was wearing one of my jackets or something. Someone looked at it and they didn't mean to say it as loud as they said it. And they were like, God, that is fucking ugly. And they walked away. And I don't think they were, cause they didn't look at me. They looked at the jacket. And I think they meant to say it more under their breath because they didn't, maybe they didn't, maybe they were just an asshole, but they said it. And I kind of was like, and I looked down and I was like, it is kind of ugly, but like, but I still loved it. Like paintings aren't all like, you don't look at all paintings like that's beautiful. No, some of them are ugly. Doesn't mean they're not good. It doesn't mean they're not interesting to look at. It doesn't mean that like people don't stare at them for hours. Car wrecks are ugly and awful, but you look at them and you're like, oh shit, like that's wild. Like they're intriguing and interesting. Not car wrecks. Sorry. That was maybe a bad example, but
no, that was a perfect example.
But you know what I mean? Like, and so like with art, like you have Picasso. The reason I keep saying Picasso, cause his stuff is just so, it's so unique and like pretty ugly for a lot of it, but it's still so intriguing and so interesting that it just makes it really, really cool to look at. And yeah, that was kind of an interesting thing where he's like, that's really ugly. And then I looked and I was like, fuck, it is kind of ugly, but I still love it. Like it doesn't, you know, like people with ugly dogs, you know, people with ugly dogs are like people are like, oh my God, that's so ugly. It's cute kind of thing. And like, you just keep staring at it and you're like, oh wow. I don't know.
It's like, that's a fucking abomination. Yeah, why do you own that thing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're like, but look at it. And then you look, the longer you look at it, you're like, okay, I can see it. Yeah, okay.
It's got a little personality.
Yeah, yeah. It's okay. Interesting.
Fashion is ever evolving. How do you envision your designs evolving over the next few years? And what factors do you think will drive those changes?
Honestly, I'm not really sure. Well, sustainability has become this like super, it always has been important. That's why I do made to order, by the way, because there's no waste in what I do, or very little waste, right? Because fashion is one of the biggest wasters in the world, right? Fast fashion is killing the world. We all know these things. But made to order, if you don't know what that means, is like when the order comes through, the fabric is sourced and you order just enough for the garment to be created. It's cut and sewn individually for that person that ordered it. So there's no inventory. So there's no wasted garments. Like at the end of a season, big fashion houses burn their stuff that they haven't sold. Not all of them.
That's awful.
But because it's better for them to burn it than to like discount it because of brand recognition and brand image. Mm. Yes, they're not going to give it away. So they just burn it, which not only are you creating it, but then you're burning it. Like it's just a double, you know, shit sandwich to the world. But monetarily and business wise, it makes sense for them. Right. And so for me, like it really is difficult doing made to order and it really has hurt the bottom line since I started it. But it's very important to me. So along that line, like the thing that I'm really kind of into right now is like trying to make garments that can be more than one thing. So you can, and reversible garments have been a thing forever. That's not what I'm trying to do. I'm not trying to do like a Champion sweatshirt that you can turn inside out and it's black on one side and white on the other, you know?
Right.
But like a coat that, like, again, one of my coats like is a 4-layer coat and you can zip off one layer and it becomes, now it's like an ankle length coat and then it's a thigh length coat and then now it's a crop top. And I'm still playing with, I have a few other things happening along those lines, but that's really interesting to me because, you know, again, there's a lot of judgment in the fashion world and even in Instagram and internet world where it's like, oh, you wore the same thing twice. Like, how dare you? It's like, what do you mean? It's an $800 shirt. Like, of course I'm gonna wear it twice. What are you talking about? And the stigma to that, hopefully, as sustainability kind of gains momentum and people are starting to become more conscious of how shitty we treat the earth, I imagine that kind of fades a little bit. So hopefully, like, as that fades and as kind of like, you know, I'm creating more of these, it hits that sweet spot of like, oh, that's a cool way to kind of still make it unique each time you wear it, but also like you're not creating more junk that's going to go in your closet and then eventually go in a landfill. So that's kind of interesting. And then like, ideally, like there's interchangeability in that and you can, you know, zip off a bottom part of this coat and put it on this coat and it becomes now a new garment. That that creates more issues or more like things to solve, because do the fabrics match? Do the, you know, there's a lot of things that you kind of got to figure out there. But you can design three coats at once that then become interchangeable, sell them individually. And then theoretically you can kind of do it like that. Again, I've been like pretty focused on this like gallery show recently, so the designing of new garments has kind of taken a back seat. I do have a backlog of like a ton of them, that not a backlog, things that I have designed that I've been putting together for collections and stuff. You know, I will still have stuff coming out, but the gallery show has kind of taken all of my time and attention recently because it's my new obsession.
Is that like a collaboration with someone, or is just something you kind of came up with on your own to kind of introduce to the world, to the art of fashion or the art in fashion, right?
Yeah, yeah. So it actually was like, I came up with it a few years back because the garment you see up there, like, you know, I had a conversation with Lupita and she's like, this thing is 53 pattern pieces, which in a button-up shirt or any shirt is a ton. Like, it's like a wild amount of pattern pieces. Like a normal t-shirt has five. It's two sleeves, front and back, and collar, right? This is more than 10 times that, which becomes really wild when you try to construct it, right? And so we were looking at that. I was like, holy shit, like, how do I tell this story? Like, because again, like, if you see that garment just on its own, you're like, yeah, that's really cool. And even if someone's like, that's the dopest thing I've ever seen, they still don't understand what went into it. There's no way they can understand it unless they feel it and touch it and open it up, right? Because even looking at it, even if you are a fashion person looking at it, I don't imagine you're like, those are different pattern pieces sewn together. Like, why would they do that? Well, you do it because you can, and you do it because it's the way to do it that is the most genuine to the original art of that piece, because that's based off of a Mondrian painting. But the idea of like telling that story was what started this. I was like, how do I explain this to people, how fucking cool this button up is? Like, how do I explain how cool it is? And I was like, well, I don't really know. Like, can I blow it apart? Because then you look at the pattern, and the pattern is, it's like 12 feet long and 5 feet wide. Like, it's, and that's just one medium, and it's like this huge thing. And so I brainstormed for months and months, like, how to figure out, like, how to kind of display it in a way that shows it. And then the idea of like kind of blowing it apart, making it 3D, came to me one day when I was drawing. And that's like the 12th iteration of like, because I was gonna, can I 3D print it? Do I just put it on a form and like pin it apart? But then the form would have to be huge, and that's not realistic. And there was no way to like do it except for the way that you see there. Yeah, it's like, and it's sewn to, it's like held together with the threading that you use to sew the garment together, and it is just a blown out version of, like, if you compact that just becomes that exact shirt.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, and then the other things, obviously, like with the telling of the story, is like taking people on the journey that, like, that became the shirt, right? It's like, here's the original drawing, here's the inspiration of the drawing, here's the pattern, here's the pattern cut out on wood displayed, just to show the sheer scale of like what it takes to make one of these garments. And then, you know, you have the product shots and then the finished piece that people will see and kind of take through the whole journey of creating that specific piece of art.
When is this going to go on display?
I'm hoping July-ish. I've hit a couple roadblocks with the other, cause like the one you see there, that's done. And the whole story of that is basically done. So I have like one story, but I have two more that I need to do. The long coat there is something I need to make in that style. Mm-hmm. And then that's what I was messing with today with the houndstooth, was like figuring out how to paint that in a similar way that I did the other one and display it, you know, on a big canvas as well. But so I still have a ton of work to do. But once I nail down like a process, right, like doing that took months and months. Doing this took, you know, 3 or 4 days, just because the growing pains on figuring out how to hang it and mount it and display it.
Yeah, it looks,
was like
very intricate.
Oh, it was, and everything like is 16ths of an inch. Like if you move one of those, you know, one of the strings just one way, it tilts everything, and then the whole garment is off because it's so symmetrical that like if one thing is not straight, the whole thing looks off, you know?
Well, now you got to move that from here to...
Yes. And I don't really know how. Like, I had to have someone over because it was hanging over here because I needed to get all the way around it to build it.
Yeah.
And I had to have someone over and we had to like walk it over. And so like, I'm like thinking, and then I had to like transfer it from like building station to like finish like gallery wrapped canvas. But yeah, that's the next thing is like, I'm hoping that there's like U-Haul trucks with like runners on the top, metal runners that you can just hook shit on. I would assume that they'd have those because a lot of trucks do, because then you need tie downs to be able to hook on.
Yeah.
Again, I've seen trucks with them, so I would have to rent one of those trucks and then basically hang that in there, take surface streets the whole way to make sure that doesn't swing too much. Cause it's like, if you walk up to it and breathe on it, it swings. Like it's like free swinging. And then I imagine some will get tangled, some will break. And then I just have to repair while I'm there. Just real time repair at the gallery and then put it on display.
Huh?
Yeah. That's the issue with creating art, right? Is like the practicality of it is wild. Like the thing you saw in there, the big piece of the composition shirt is 8 foot by 8 foot. Like there's no way that you can make something 8 foot by 8 foot and transport it. Like realistically.
Yeah.
Right. Now, again, if you have museum money, right. Or rich art people money where they can just get a big truck, hire 50 people to do it. Great. Awesome. That's not realistic for me. So I had to break it into four by four pieces. Right. And then put it together. And then I have to take it apart, transport it, put it together again. And all of those steps kind of change the way you make things. Right. Cause I would have made that totally different. I would have just mounted it clean on. But I had to do it in such a way that like I can mount, take off, because,
oh my God,
again, practicality wise, it creates issues that, you know, and if you own a gallery, you can probably just build it in the gallery, but I don't own a gallery and I can't pay a gallery for a week to build something in there and then pay for a week to have it displayed, you know? So it's just a lot of like things that I had to figure out. And in that though, you know, I learned a lot of fucking cool skills and I learned a lot of cool things. Like we talked about, like gallery wrapping is expensive. Like getting things gallery wrapped is expensive. And it's unrealistic for how much shit I need to get gallery wrapped that I just was like, well, I'm just going to teach myself how to do it. And I figured it out. And it's really like pretty labor intense. Like it's a lot of like stretching and stapling and like it's pretty cool. And now like if I have to gallery wrap something, I just go, okay, cool. Like I got to wrap it. Like that thing on the ground there is that just not wrapped. It's the same thing, like metal backed thing that I'll end up wrapping. And then it looks like that finished.
Huh?
Yeah.
You love making challenges for yourself, huh?
Yeah, man. Like it sounds like a challenge, but the idea behind it is to make it easier once like you have to transport
it. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because if I made it like one piece, way easier initially, how the fuck do I move it?
Yeah.
Like there's no way of getting it out anywhere. Like I can't do it. But you're right. Like you said earlier, the goal would be to just have my own gallery and I can just build shit in there for however long I need and then just run an exhibit or run like a show for a month, let people come in whenever they want. And then once that month is over, like either I move it to a different location. Yeah. Move it to a different location, like rent it out to other galleries or museums or whatever, and then do another one, you know, in that space. Or I have my own little farmhouse with a cool little, barn that I do all this stuff in. And then I just have a big truck that I can just put it in.
You have to go far from LA to.
Yeah, no, I know.
Find something affordable.
Yeah. I mean, I could live in a tiny house and just have a big barn that I build myself.
Yeah. From the way you were just describing everything,
mm-hmm.
your balance between creativity and practicality, you seem to be more on the creative side because the practical side is harder for you now, thinking about all the logistics of getting all this art out of here and hung up. What about the balance between those two? Like if you're just designing a piece, how do you keep it practical but also creative? Do you think about that at all?
Yeah, you have to. If it's...
But you got poor Lupita over there going, what the fuck am I supposed to do with all these pieces?
Well, so the fashion stuff, like if it's like a garment, I do not think of the practicality all that much because she has proven to me over and over again that she can fucking figure it out in like a really beautiful way. Right. Cause if you look at my drawings, like I'm not a gifted drawer. Like they're not great, but what they are is they're just what they need to be. And then I'll have a description of exactly what I want next to it. Right. Like it'll be like here's this coat this length is here and this is this length and this is how many buttons and this is where the buttons are. And like, this is the width of the bottom and the width, like I get very specific, certain times obviously, but there is like, again, I don't think of practicality. I think of like, if it actually can happen. And again, that's like the rules of the universe again, that we were talking about. Like I've designed garments that I'm like, well, there's no way this works because it doesn't connect anywhere that will brace it for gravity to win, you know?
Yeah.
And so those are things that you kind of go with designing, but no, I actually stopped thinking about like practicality with the fashion side of it a couple years back, because like I made a couple I gave Lupita a couple of really terrible drawings, like really bad, that were really, really like odd pieces. And she was like, okay. And she would like text me once in a while and ask questions. And she'd be like, hey, like, what did you mean here? And I was like, well, I meant this, and I'll explain it. And she would like be like, okay, first sample's ready. And if you don't know, oftentimes what happens is like you develop a piece, she makes the pattern. You don't see the pattern unless you ask, right? Again, that's my process because I trust her and because we've had this like history of like really amazing things. And then they'll call you and be like, okay, here's your first sample. And usually what happens is first sample happens and it's not perfect because she goes off a drawing and she's like, okay, she tried her best to like kind of get it exactly where she thought I wanted it. But then again, you put on the human body and the human body is much different than a flat computer screen, right? And so you put it on, she fits me, we look at it, we pin it, we whatever. And then you go for a second sample. And then usually second sample is all we've ever needed because, you know, we do pretty well with the initial one. That it's just like that one needed two or three samples because of the lines weren't straight. And like, again, because it's so prevalent, if it doesn't line up perfectly.
Yeah.
And so that one needed a couple samples, but like that coat, that's the first sample of that coat, which is wild that it turned out perfect. Like it's pretty cool. Again, that comes with time and comfortability and whatever. But the reason I stopped thinking about it is because I gave her a couple wild designs, like really wild designs. Like there's a pair of pants in there that like they're sewn together with like thick leather thread. Or it looks like they are, and it looks like they're different pieces like patched together. And she had her team like create buttonholes and hand thread it, and it looked incredible. And I was like, oh my God. And I assumed we'd need two or three patterns or two or three samples because it was such an odd piece. And so she just nailed it and knocked it out of the park. And we had a conversation about it. And I was like, was that difficult? She goes, yeah, it was really hard. She goes, but I was pretty certain I knew what you wanted and how you wanted it. So I just went for it. That's kind of when I also stopped thinking about like, not that I don't care that she thinks it's difficult or whatever, but we've had such wonderful conversations around it where she's like, no, she goes, you challenge me. Like she goes, nine out of 10 clients I'm making, you know, like pretty easy stuff pattern wise, you know, not that it's not any better or worse. It's just not super detailed. And my stuff is like it teaches her
a lot
as well.
She likes the challenge.
Yeah. And it teaches her.
She takes all the skills that she has and she gets to use them.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And she's, based on her, she's learned a lot of new things based on like what we've made because she didn't think about it that way, or she didn't like, why would I construct something that way? It doesn't make any sense. And it's like, well, because of this. Okay, cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's kind of like upholstery. I used to do upholstery back in high school, after high school, and like half of the stuff that would come in, it was so boring. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like chairs, basic chairs and stuff like that, and couches. But then we would get these like really old pieces that like rich people would have in their house and like legit antiques. Mm-hmm. And you had to be so careful and you had to find the perfect fabric and the sewing lines had to be perfect. The welting had to be perfect. And I always loved that challenge because, you know, half of the week was just boring ass shit, like stripping stuff. And then like we would get like one piece that would be our baby for months. We would just take care of it and do it perfectly so that it could last another 100 years, you know? And I loved being challenged like that. So I could definitely see where she was coming from, where she probably looks forward to you.
Yeah.
For two year pieces.
Yeah. I mean, we've had a good, like, again, a really interesting relationship. Like we talked about, we've never seen anything like this before. And so like the first request of like, hey, I need you to cut out the pattern, but I don't want you to sew it together. I want you to sew 1/2-inch pockets. It's like, well, that doesn't make sense. And so like I had to go in there. like it really was like a thing that like I didn't know if it made sense. And so she was like, and so we had to go in there and like kind of do it by hand or whatever. And then I'm asking her team, who their whole life at this point is like just sewing garments together. And it's like, okay, don't sew this one together though. Sew it to itself, sort of, but like only in pockets. And like, and it's, you're gonna have to do it 53 times. Some of the pieces are really small and you gotta like get in there. And they're like, and they were just, they're so good and like really, really cool. But yeah, like she, you know, she, it's art. Like, and she's like, I just like being a part of this journey. And it's really amazing to have her. We had a nice talk the other day about it, like, because she offered her space for the first gallery show, which is amazing. Nice. Yeah. It's super cool. And so, yeah, it's just been a really cool experience to like have someone that, cause she knows how to build like, she's like if I was an architect, she'd be the contractor, right? The carpenter, right? Yeah. Like, so I'm like, hey, here are the blueprints. Like, here's the building. And my blueprints are fucking ugly, by the way. You know, can you make better blueprints and then, and then build the building, you know? And so, and then I get credit for it, and you know, and it's great. And I try to give her as much credit as possible because she really is like super, super crucial. And like,
no, I like how you shout her out and all your,
she's great. Yeah. Without her, I'm not here. Like, I'm just not, I wouldn't have made anything that I've made without her and her team. It's been really cool.
Awesome. Shout out to Lupita.
Yeah. She's great. I mean, you got to give like credit where credit's due. Like, she, I come from Montana. Like, there's no art, there's no culture. Like I had to learn all this shit as I go, and she's been this really, really patient, amazing teacher.
Awesome. What's your most recent collection called?
You
name them by numbers, right? Or like, yeah, drop eight.
Yeah. I think it's, honestly, I don't remember what number it is.
I think it's eight.
Is it eight?
I had to look up the Roman numeral.
Yeah. I think it's eight, and it's Raw is what it's called.
I'm still learning how to count.
Yeah, man. Every time I'm like, does the one go before the V? No, but yeah, it's Drop 8 Raw. It came out in late last year, maybe July, August, or maybe September, October. I'm not really sure. I don't really remember. And it's funny because I had other drops planned. Like, I have photos for the next drop, but then it became like the pieces that are in the drop are part of the gallery show. And so it was this like kind of battle with myself. Like, do I release all this stuff that's super dope? Cause I don't like sitting on things, like, because I'm like,
you want to move on.
Well, I do, but also like, it's so fucking sick that I want the world to see it. Like, even if my reach is small and like, it only sells a few units, like, I don't care. I just be like, hey, look at this dope shit. Like, let it inspire you, or look at it because it's cool or whatever. Like, because I just want it. And, but it became a thing where like the gallery show became more and more real, and these exhibits became more and more real, that it was like, why don't I just kind of do it congruently? You know, where like, I do the gallery show because I want the gallery show to be its own thing. I don't want it to be a promotional tool for the next drop, because that's not what it is. It's completely like, not completely separate, because that would be naive for me to say, because it's based on the same garments, but
you just don't want it to be dependent.
Yeah. It is a separate entity, right? This is a gallery show. This isn't for purchasing. This is for looking and consuming art and just bringing some beauty into the world. And then the fashion is obviously like, along the same lines, but then there becomes sales, and you know, there's monetary stuff attached to that, which brings in the business side, which with on the gallery side, I don't have that or need it or want it. So it was that kind of like, do I wait? Is it dumb to wait? Because I have, you know, probably 50 pieces that I haven't released yet, which is crazy to say. And like, thinking about it, I'm like, oh, this, you've had this for a year and you haven't shown anybody. And there is the want to move on part of it. Not that I am like excited to not think about it anymore, because I think about everything I've ever made, but getting it out in the world is sort of like this like cathartic relief of like, okay, nice, it's out, it's done.
Yeah,
you know. And I still make everything that like if someone orders a piece from drop two, like I still make it, like I source the fabric and make it for them, but there is like there is a release to it when things are released.
when you drop new collections, how do you differentiate them? What makes them different from the last?
Honestly, I used to do themes. Like, I used to like kind of make them like I would have a collection that was like, you know, more casual wear, right? Or I would do one that was outerwear or workwear or whatever. And kind of as I started like evolving, I guess, you know, the quote unquote like rules of fashion is like, you do like spring, summer, fall, winter, right? Like, those are kind of like the shows, and like that's what Fashion Week is. And you display garments that are going to be on sale for the next 6 months. And then 6 months from then, do another show, display garments that are going to be on sale for the next 6 months. And that all kind of started like, a big part of that was like having to fill a brick and mortar, right? And so you make enough garments that will fill a store that you can fill for, you know, 6 months to sell.
You don't have to do that anymore.
I don't have to do that. And with how, like you said, how the world's moving, it's not necessary anymore. I honestly just, like, whatever I visually think looks good together on a website and on, again, like photographically, like works together and thematically isn't necessarily as important. I don't want it to be like necessarily all over the place, but that kind of stopped mattering to me because I just wanted to, because again, I turned the corner of like, is it more art than business? Yes. Okay. Well then artists do whatever they feel they want to in their heart, right? Yeah. Or in their mind or in their creative soul or whatever verbiage you want to use. And then they show the world. And so that was like the thing where it was like, I'm going to come out with the stuff that I think looks good together and that I believe is dope. I don't really care if like, well, this doesn't go together. These clash or what. I don't give a shit. Like, you're wearing something that maybe is ugly too. Like, who cares? Like, no, none of it actually really matters. I just want to like create art, and the people that are going to appreciate it are going to appreciate it. And they're not going to look at a coat and be like, that coat's super cool. That coat is also super cool. But together they're not cool. It's like, no one does that. No one thinks that way, you know? And so I don't really like, am too concerned about that. I try not to release like my heavy jackets in June, you know, because there's realistic sides to it where it's like, okay, like maybe not do that in June. But honestly, doing it in July or August makes sense because it takes about a month to make it. It starts getting cold. So there is like, you know, because I'm made to order and because I do things individually, like the rules don't really exist. And fuck the rules, because like, who cares? Like, the rules are made by people that are long dead now, and they're followed by people that are on their way out. And
word.
And you know what I mean? And the world's changing. Like, it is becoming a world where everything is at your fingertips. So like, you don't really need tastemakers to tell you what you like anymore. Like,
yeah,
you know, there's no like inside access to shit where it's like, oh, this stuff comes, like everybody knows everything immediately anyway. So just get it out and let people judge it themselves. And if they want it, they want it. If they don't, fuck it. They can move on to the next thing. Keep scrolling. No big deal.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to like, it used to affect my life. And now like, it's very easy to just scroll up with your thumb. If you don't like what you're looking at, you know, if you don't like it, cool. You don't need a double tap. No big deal. If you do, check it out. Yeah. So you don't need, I don't even care if you buy it. If you like it, awesome. That's the goal. Like, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Tell someone about it.
Yeah. Like, and if not, you don't even have to do that. Just smile and just be like, shit, that shit's cool. And then look at the next thing that I make. And then look at the next thing I make. You don't got to buy anything. That's fine. If it brings you joy, keep checking it out. You know?
Yeah. I like how you're leaning into the artistic side of it, because you could get wrapped up in the fashion industry and you could get wrapped up in the seasonal cycles and you could get wrapped up in all that horse shit. But taking that part out of it and really focusing on it as art is really, really smart. That's really awesome.
Thank you. It's financially not that smart, if I'm being honest, but like mentally and like,
yeah, mentally, but yeah, you can't like, keep doing it if you're not mentally okay.
Exactly.
You
know?
So, and that's what brings you the most joy. Mm-hmm. So you gotta give and take with that stuff.
Yes. And again, like everybody has to find their own balance. Like if financially you have to focus more on the business side of it and sell more units to like financially, like be viable or survive, then you got to do what you got to do. Right.
Yeah.
Fortunately, like I'm at a place like, man, I'm not like balling out or whatever, but I'm able to concentrate on the art and I sell enough units to allow me to do that. And a big thing is like repeat business. Like that's a huge thing for me because people, once they buy something, they feel it and you put it on. Like the one detriment of the way that I do things is people don't often get to try my stuff on. And that hurts a lot because once people put something on that I've made or like wear it once or try it, they're like, holy shit. And I always, I don't know if I've sold something and not gotten another purchase out of that person because the quality is there. It feels good. And when they wear it, they get compliments. Like people are like, God, every time I wear this, like someone says, that's a nice coat or that's a nice whatever. That's a nice whatever. And if it makes them feel good, that's the whole point. Like it makes me feel good making it, right? It's just double good. If someone's like, I get emails all the time. They're like, hey, I got the garment or I got the coat. It's way cooler than I thought it was. And I got a ton of compliments. Thank you. I'm like, it's sold, done. It's awesome.
Wearable art.
Yeah, man. And like wearable art. And if it makes you feel good, awesome. Cause like how often do you wear something and you're like, eh, who cares? Right? Probably a lot, which is fine. But how often do you put something on and you're just like, and it changes how you feel about your day. And you're like, I cannot wait to wear that because that day is going to be a good day. And I'm going to go places where I know people will see it or whatever.
Yeah.
And it just, the confidence that it gives you and the joy that it hopefully brings you is worth the high price point, really. Like, I wish I could do it for cheaper. I really do. Like, I really wish that it wasn't as expensive as it is because I would really love everybody to be able to have what I make. But the balance of like being sustainable, being responsible, doing it in LA, paying people fair wages really is like really, really difficult. Like it just is hard, you know, and the price dictates that. Like I'm not, my margins are significantly smaller than what they're supposed to be, right? They're supposed to be like, you know, most fashion is 100% markup, 50% markup. I'm nowhere near either of those because I understand how expensive it is and I can't even afford my own shit. And so like, it's not that like I'm trying to make a ton of money. It's like, hey, the reality of this is exactly how much it costs to make it. And the margins are just so I can make the next thing. Right. Yeah. Cause like if I sell three or four of these, that pays for the sample of the next garment that I make and so on and so on. And so it just allows me to keep creating the art. Really, that's the goal now. Like, if as long as I'm able to create art for the rest of my life, I don't mind living in an apartment. I don't mind renting. I don't mind like not having a house or a backyard or whatever. Like, I'd love a backyard for my dog, of course, but like we get enough exercise. We're out playing twice a day. Like, he gets a ton of exercise, sleeps all day. I would love that, but if I'm able to make the art for the rest of my life, perfect life. It's great.
Yeah, that's something that I promised myself at a really young age was, you know, I'm going to invest in my equipment. I'm going to, you know, I've probably had these microphones since I was like 20 years old.
No shit.
You know, because like I always told myself that as long as I can make music or make art or be creative with my equipment, then that's all I need to be happy, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't think I've made any money off of my art, but it's out there. And it made me happy making it, and hopefully someone will hear it and it'll make them happy. And you know, that those are the type of people that I like to have on this podcast, because it's the passion. You know, I love the passion that people have for their art, and I want them to be able to tell people about it, you know. So where can we find the information about your upcoming gallery?
You can't. There's no information. No.
Ooh, did I get a scoop? Does anybody know about this yet?
No, a handful of people do, but that's it. Like, yeah, a handful of people. My mom, Lupita, obviously. A few friends. Most people don't know anything about it.
Sweet, I got the scoop.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I don't know what it is yet, so it's hard to talk about something. Also, like, I'm this, like, weird, like, superstitious kind of dude where it's like, if I talk about it too much, it won't happen.
Yeah.
You know? And so, like, I don't tease things. Like, once it's done, like, once everything is done, then I will be like, hey, it's real now. But yeah, you definitely like, and you're the first, you're actually like, not the first person to see this stuff. Like, you're one of a handful of people to actually see kind of what the exhibits will look like. Yeah. But there's no information yet. It will, like, I will like create like a, not a press release necessarily, but I'll create like an Instagram, even saying campaign right there sounds so gross to me. But I'll create like, cause it just like, it's like, oh, cause it feels like I'm selling myself and I'm not like, just come look at this shit if you want. If you don't, cool too. It is dope though. You're going to want to look at it. It's fucking super sick.
It's awesome.
But yeah, so what I'll do is I'll do like Instagram posts and probably Facebook or whatever. And the likelihood of me paying someone to do it is probably pretty high because it makes me super anxious and I do not like doing it.
Yeah.
So
tell me about it.
I will. It's like really like, that's like, and again, I'm very fortunate to not like be worrying about that anymore, but I do understand that worry. But it just feels so icky to me to be like, hey, this is right in your face, buy it or look at it or comment, like, and share.
Which I know, again, I feel guilty putting like promos out there for even this thing. I'm just like, I don't want to badger these people,
but
like,
you have to, right?
Like, you have to. It's fucking sucks.
Yeah. And so, you know, the balance is kind of what is important, I guess, right? Like, because you have to do it to a certain extent. And then once you reach the point where you hope to reach, then you don't really have to do it anymore because it'll do it itself. Right.
Yeah.
Again, whatever, you know, helps you find joy. Right. But yes, the gallery show, I will like, I might give teasers of the exhibits in like artistic ways, but I don't want to show everything because I want people to see it in person because photos don't do it justice. Like, I've taken photos of that a lot and photos are cool, but like,
but it's a 3D
thing, and you got to walk around it. You got to like see like holy shit, like was that? And I hope people don't do that because you can't touch art. But
until
people breathe on it, don't move.
People putting their hand in it. I mean, until AR gets to the point where like we can all just do it easily.
Yeah, that's true.
Know,
yeah, yeah.
Then, you know, it's got to be an exhibit. It's got to be.
Someone actually said that looks like, one of the people I saw it said it looks kind of like AR. They're like, oh, that kind of looks like, it looks like a 3D thing that's not actually supposed to be 3D.
Yeah, it looks fake.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Yeah,
it's pretty cool.
In a good way.
Yeah, yeah, no, I agree. No, I that is actually a huge compliment. Because it was like once I built it and I looked at it, I was like, holy shit, that looks, it doesn't really look real, but it like, because it's suspended too. Like, and unless you look closely, like, I mean, you can see the threads, but you don't really pay attention to them until you're staring at them, right? They kind of fortunately fall off into the background. But yeah.
I know, I've been looking at it this whole time.
Yeah.
And like the only reason I can see the threads up top is because of the picture behind it.
Yeah. Yeah. And hopefully like, and each, the thread is the same color as the pattern piece that it holds up. So theoretically should blend into itself. But yeah, again, like, yeah, I just want to, I want people's mind to open up a little bit and be like, oh shit, that's that, you know?
I want people to appreciate it.
Yeah. Like, and learn something.
Yeah.
Like learn something, like inspire them. Like, cause as an artist, like, you know, there's a lot of reasons to be an artist, but once you get old, like I am, and once you've kind of like gotten past the idea of like money being success, right? Because when you're young, you're taught like, oh, be rich. That's successful. Well, no, it's not. I know a lot of sad rich people. Like, you know, success is, in my opinion, is joy. It's going through life, you know, without this burden or this like pressure or whatever. It's just like finding joy in everything that you do, whether it's complex or simple stuff or whether it's stuff that'll impact the world or not. You know, my little brother was born to be a farmer. Like we have different dads. So his dad's a farmer, a rancher, and he was born to be a rancher. And he got off the ranch for a few years to go to college and whatever. And he was like, oh, I'm just gonna end up being a rancher my whole life. And when I was younger, I was like, that's the stupidest idea ever, because I was like, what do you get out of that? Like, there's no, you're not impacting the world. Like, you're impacting your community, whatever. Like, again, this is young me saying this, so this is not how I truly feel now. I thought it was so dumb. And then like as I got older, I was like, that's joy to him. That's his life. And he loves it. Like he legit like loves getting up early, taking care of the chickens and the cows and the horses and all that shit. And he finds so much joy in it and so much peace that like kind of as my mind was like growing and changing, I was like, that's life. Like, it doesn't matter where you are, what you do, like finding that joy. Right. And so for me as an artist, my joy is like having people have an experience looking at my stuff and potentially inspiring them to be brave enough to do the same thing. Right. Because it is scary. It's scary to like, to make art, and it's scary to put your art into the world, and it's scary to like be like, hey, this is a year of my life, 2 years of my life, 5 years of my life studying and understanding this, judge it and shit on it and mm-hmm. you know, comment mid like on an Instagram post or whatever. That's never happened to me, but like but I see that shit.
You know what I mean? Drives me fucking insane.
Yeah. And like, and again, like it's hard to like put your heart into the world and be like, hey, this is my life's work.
Terrifying.
Fucking destroy it.
It's terrifying.
Know? But again, that brings me joy. Like, once I got over the hurdle of like giving a shit what people think, you know, because who cares? Like, none of that matters. Internet doesn't matter. People don't matter. You know, it matters. You matter. And the people around you matter. That's it. You know?
Yeah. There's been plenty of times recently where living on a ranch or a farm seems very appealing.
No, it really does, dude. Just the space to make art and,
like, and God.
The slowness of actual life and not this like over romanticized part of life where like being busy is a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, like people like use that as like a badge of honor. Oh, I'm so busy. That sucks.
Yeah.
Like really? Like that's not great. Like I'm busy with this, but this is not, I don't consider this busy. I just consider this like art. I'm just making art all day. Like I have a lot to do, but shit I enjoy. So it's not like busy work. It's just fucking life, you know?
Yeah,
but a ranch, like that's why I said earlier, like you gotta get way out of California. That's whatever. I just want a space where life just moves slower, you know. But I do want it to be close enough because I do love LA.
You can go right over the mountains.
I really do love LA. I know. I
go
I've
right over
about
the
that.
Mountains, and you could find a big plot of land and nice big house. Some of them have those big old garages.
Oh, see, that sounds like, so great.
That's my dream, man.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. I do still like the beach, though. So I do want to be within a drive of the beach.
It's about an hour.
Perfect.
You just go right over the mountains, and you're there.
All right, I'm down. That sounds good. Freddie, I'll like that too.
I'll give you the
zip code,
the spots.
Okay,
yeah.
Perfect.
My wife found them all already.
Oh, nice. That's great.
Well, thank you, Nate.
Yeah, thank you.
Do you want to plug your website?
Yeah. It's www.shopn8.com.
You don't have to do the www anymore.
It felt perfect to how I've been speaking about not wanting to sell my shit and just doing it so dumb and old school.
Okay, sorry. One more time.
No. Yeah, the website is shop, S-H-O-P, Nate, N, and then the number 8.com. Yeah, if you see anything you like, check it out. Or just check it out because you want to see some cool garments and some cool photos. No obligation to purchase anything. But if you do have an idea of anything you want to purchase, DM me on Instagram and we can chat about it further, you know, and we can kind of see what we can do.
Cool. Thanks for talking with me, Nate.
Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us. It was nice having you. I love these delightful creations styled for casual living, don't you? And I'm glad to know that now American families everywhere, styled in California fashions wherever they live. And thank you. Bye-bye.
Nate, once again, thank you. Thanks for coming on the Memo Show. I appreciate you. This was a great episode, I think. Had a little Pete, had a little Nate, had a little comedy. I think Pete was kidding. I don't know. And Nate, you're a funny dude, man. You're so intellectual, so smart. You're a thinker, man. I like that. I like what you're doing. I've seen what you're doing. I believe in it. Believe in yourself. Don't stop. Can't wait for your gallery. Again, Shop Nate, S-H-O-P-N, and then the number 8.com. I think that's his Instagram, too. Go check it out. He doesn't care if you buy anything. He just wants you to see it. And there's boobies. Also, stay tuned for the next episode. It might be a little different. I'm going to do something a little different next episode. I hope you like it. Go share. Go like. Go follow. At The Memo Show. TheMemoShow. On Instagram. Do the Spotify and the Apple Podcast thing, please. Hit the little download button. That's so stupid. I don't know why they do it. Why can't they just go by streams like normal fucking things? Anyway. Got some cool stuff for you coming up. I've been daydreaming and brainstorming, and this is going to turn into a whole thing. So stick around, tell your friends, and if you have content that you want me to put on the show, send it to me. Email it to me. memo.productions@icloud.com. Anything. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. And I will see you next time.